It's a meeting place. It's a meeting place of its members, who are now 164 countries, if you include the European Union itself as a country. The EU is actually 29 members. Okay. Each of the 28 member states are members of the WTO, including the UK. And that's quite often misunderstood in the talk about Brexit, because people think the UK will have to renegotiate membership. No, it doesn't. It only renegotiates certain terms of its membership. It's a meeting place where governments come to try and resolve problems that they have with trade. And the initial problem that they tackled back at the end of the Second World War was mainly about reducing tariffs, so that tariffs, and disciplining tariffs, so that trade could flow more smoothly. There have been negotiations on and off ever since. And the result of those negotiations are more open markets, markets that are less likely to close, and other rules and disciplines governing various aspects of trade, now including trade in services and also certain rules on intellectual property.
Within the UK, there's this growing idea, particularly in the parliamentary backbenches, about leaving the EU without any deal and trading purely on WTO terms. What would that actually mean in practice?
It means that the UK would move away from the present free trade agreement that it has, particularly with the European Union, which is a massively deep free trade deal, the single market, covering everything that's in the single market. It would be moving away from that. It would also be moving away until it renegotiates free trade agreements that the EU has with others, for example, the EU-Korea free trade agreement, all of that. And moving back to some kind of baseline, which is the terms of the WTO only. And in practical terms, it means tariffs as well, tariffs and trade between the UK and the EU. It'll have a lot more impact than just tariffs. But if we stick to tariffs, there are a lot of sectors where tariffs are high, particularly in agriculture. For example, one of the things that would happen is the UK currently exports around 80,000 tons of lamb to the EU. Trading on WTO terms means that trade, which is currently duty-free, will suddenly face very, very high tariffs and will probably be impossible to export, or very difficult to export UK lamb to the EU unless there is some other deal. So no deal would mean that those producers, those farmers, would be hit hard. So it's not evenly spread across the economy. It depends which sector you're talking about.
And you mentioned some of those other factors. Presumably you're talking about things like safety standards, about certification.
Yes, everything that the single market deals with would change. So yes, for goods, it's certification, the safety and the standards of products. But there's also services, obviously. That's also been in the news a lot about how services companies are leaving. And so on.
So, hypothetically, if we were to leave the EU without a deal, the borders, suddenly things become a lot more complicated when it comes to those checks, and that potentially causes delays. Why not just let all the lorries through without checks? I mean, we know that goods were coming from the EU safely the day before. Why not let them continue?
Well, there is a bit of a debate going on about whether you can do that or not. There are legal implications, practical implications. If the UK says as a blanket policy that it will not check products coming from the EU because it wants to keep that flow going, but then the UK also says, which was one of the objectives of some campaigners for Brexit, if the UK says, well, we want to have our own regulations which diverge from the EU, and those regulations do diverge from the EU, they're different, and still the UK doesn't check the goods coming from the EU, then the Americans will say, well, maybe you should drop the checks on our products as well, because under the WTO, you're supposed to treat everybody equally unless there's a free trade agreement. So if there's no deal with the EU and there are no checks with products from the EU, then there may eventually be a problem with the UK discriminating between the EU and other WTO members.
And what happens then? Where do these disagreements actually end up if companies do fall out over these things?
Well, I started off by saying that the WTO is a negotiating forum. It has a number of other functions. One is monitoring how well countries are keeping their promises, abiding by the agreements in the WTO. And ultimately, if a country believes that another country is violating an agreement, for example, is discriminating when it's not supposed to, then there is a dispute settlement process, which most of us would think of as a kind of court. Lawyers will say, no, it's not a court, it's a dispute settlement process, which is different, but it's easier to think of it as being a court. So one country complains that another country may be breaking the rules, it's heard in this process, and there's a ruling at the end that says, yes, it's violating an agreement, or no, it's not violating agreement. So you have this kind of process, and if there is an infringement, then the complaining countries may have grounds to retaliate by setting up trade barriers. That can take some time, and it is fairly complicated. And one of the problems at the moment is that there is some conflict in the WTO about how this dispute settlement process is being run. And basically, the United States is blocking the reappointment of appeal judges that could ultimately mean that the appeal process cannot function. We're still some months away from that. But if that's the case, then this would seriously undermine the dispute settlement process. So relying on disputes in the WTO at this stage has a huge question mark over it.
And if that does get jammed up, what happens then? Surely countries will still be able to trade, even if cases aren't necessarily being heard.
Yes, because trade is, as I said at the beginning also, there's a huge amount of trade that just flows. There's no dispute, no conflict. It just happens. So that will continue. The problem is that the system is supposed to be based on rules. So it's like playing a sport, playing football. You have a referee who decides whether the players are playing by the rules or not. If your referee suddenly has the whistle taken away, then the game could continue, and the players could just respect the rules anyway, or in the end it could all break down. We're still some way away from all of that, and countries are desperately trying to avoid that from happening.
And I suppose, just finally, Peter, taking a step back from all this, if at some point in the future we do get this all settled and giving the UK's negotiators a bit of the benefit of the doubt, I mean, do you think there is scope to actually negotiate better deals and arrangements outside of the EU?
I think the first task would be to negotiate a good deal with the EU, because if you don't do that, then it means turning around the economy. It's not a question of whether you like the EU or not. It's a question of the way the economy is tuned. I think that the UK certainly has the negotiators who are capable of negotiating something with the EU. And after that, there is this question about negotiating deals with other countries. I don't think that it's likely that any of these deals, say with the US or Australia or Japan or whoever, if the UK negotiates that any of those can replace economically what the UK is getting from the European Union. The problem is not the officials who are negotiating. The question mark is over politicians and whether they are being realistic in what they say. And sadly, quite a lot of what we're hearing is unrealistic. For example, the idea that, negotiating this, that, or the other is quick and easy. We could do it in overnight, or we could do it within a month or two. That's certainly not true, and it's quite irresponsible to say that kind of thing. Trade negotiations take years.